This is Around the Rim with LaChyna Robinson.
Hello, basketball fans, and welcome inside a special edition of Around the Rim, one that tells the story of the 1983 and 84 championship teams for the USC Trojans. Their women's basketball program was a trailblazer in its own ways, where they had almost a super team of some of the biggest names in college basketball: Cheryl Miller, Cynthia Cooper, Pam and Paula McGee. What a dynasty they were. What a talented team. So fun to watch. I am your host, LaChyna Robinson, joined as always by my fantastic and fabulous producer, Tariqa Foster Brasby. And we are going to take you inside with some of the biggest names and biggest contributors to the success of that team, and people that can tell the story the best.
That's right, LaChyna. So to help us tell that story, we've enlisted six people who knew this team the best. Head coach Linda Sharp, assistant coach Fred Williams, team captain Juliet Robinson, point guard Rhonda Windham, forward Pamela McGee, and guard Cynthia Cooper Dyke. So throughout this podcast, you're going to hear them discuss their relationships together, coming together as a team, learning how to play with each other, learning each other, the pride that they have in USC and what it meant to be a Trojan and what it was like as far as the landscape of women's basketball at that time, the rivalries. You're going to get to know more about the players and from their teammates themselves, and you'll hear clips from Gino Auriemma, Reggie Miller, Doris Burke, Tisha Pinachero, the 1984 Olympics, Paula McGee, and the calls from the championship games of 1983 and 1984.
Let's all get a history lesson from the inside of what was so special about USC women's basketball and the women of Troy.
Louisiana Tech University and the University of Southern California Trojan women. Meet the starting lineups. For Southern California, at forward, a 6'3 junior from Flint, Michigan, number 11, Paula McGee. For Southern California, at forward, a 6'2 freshman from Riverside, California, number 31, Cheryl Miller. For Southern California, at center, a 6'3 junior from Flint, Michigan, number 30, Pam McGee. For Southern California, at guard, a 5'5 freshman from New York City, number 21, Rhonda Windham. And for Southern California, at guard, a 5'9 sophomore from Los Angeles, California, number 44, Cynthia Cooper.
No question that this point in the history of the game of women's basketball was dominated by USC, La Tech, Tennessee Lady Vols, ODU. What an exciting time to recap, to live again, how women's college basketball really got its popular start.
Let's listen back on that time. And Pam McGee and Fred Williams will share more with us on what those rivalries were really like.
Miller with the miss. 1 second. It's all over, and Southern Cal has won the national championship.
I'm just going to tell you, when you build those rivalries, I was watching the finals with Kim Mulkey, and they were interviewing her, and they said, you know, I took my girls with the Southern draw to see that banner that I have been here before. And I said, yeah, but make sure your girl see the mother two next to it. And tell
important.
Your girl who knocked you guys out, the mother two banners next to yours. Because, you know, that those rivalries, you just remember it. And so we just did not like La Tech. And when they had their first arena, they scheduled us, and their arena sat like 8,000 people. It was a brand new arena. And it was packed wall-to-wall people. And we went in and won the game. And that was when we really sat back and said, okay, we got something here. this is a special team because we went into their territory and we won and we beat them on their own court with their first grand opening of this unique facility. And it's in Ruston, Louisiana. And that was like the only show in town. And it was packed wall to wall. And we came in and we beat them on their own home court.
72-61. USC leads it. Another substitute coming into the game for Tennessee, Lisa Webb. That's the kind of sub I was. The coach used to say, 3 seconds to go, we're 10 down. Go in there and do something.
I think they're ready to celebrate as soon as this thing ends. You're going to see them burst from that bench like a rocket's been fired. Nice hand for Ostrowski and Habe as they leave. A little high-fiving going on right now over there. Well, they gave it their best shot.
She's had a super year at Tennessee, and she really has.
That does it. USC Women of Troy are the 1984 NCAA champions.
My memory with Tennessee, you know, with Pathead Summit, you know, starting out the program and really starting to generate, you know, herself as a coach and getting great players in, and you know that I think the championship game there that we won against them at UCLA at that time, the second championship. It was just a knockout, drag-out battle against the Tennessee, the Volunteers. But I would say we went to scrimmage. At that time, you could go scrimmage. And I think the scrimmages against Tennessee was more of a game than some of the games we played, you know, during the course of the season. But you know, Tennessee was always tough, and I just knew that, you know, Pat Summitt would have her team ready. She always give that stare to the opponents, how to intimidate people.
A storyline that may get missed, but I don't even see how, because the personality is so big and their story is so inspirational, was that of Pam and Paula McGee, the twins, who had such an interesting dynamic between them as players, but also as sisters.
The 6'3 senior, number 11, Paula McGee. The 6'3 senior, number 30, Pam McGee.
They were a unit, the McGee twins, Paula and Pam. And if sometimes people couldn't tell them apart, it really didn't matter. They were inseparable. They were co-captains and co-stars in high school, both All-Americans on a two-time state championship team in Flint, Michigan. They were co-captains and co-stars in college, both All-Americans on a two-time NCAA championship team at the University of Southern California. Young, gifted, and 6'3", they even shared the cover of Jet, a post-championship trip to the White House, and so much more.
We were used to sharing the limelight. We were used to sharing a lot of awards. We always looked at each other as best friends.
They also shared a dream of representing the United States in the Olympic Games, a dream Paula could kid about 2 years ago when she pretended to be a TV reporter asking her All-American USC teammate Cheryl Miller about the McGee twins.
1984 Olympic team, what are your plans? You want to be on that team. How about the twins? You think that you three can make it, all three of you can be on that team?
I see no reason why we can't.
Coach Linda Sharp and teammates Julia Robinson, Rhonda Windham, and Cynthia Cooper, help us get to know the McGee twins just a little bit better.
One of the things about when I recruited them, their mother came out with them, Diane McGee, and she wanted to make sure that her girls got to a university that had a good academic program and wanted to have a coach that cared about them. And I think recruiting Diane was just as much as important as it was recruiting Pam and Paula McGee. Pam and Paula, they were in two different positions and definitely different personalities. And what I recall on some things, like if I had to get on one of them, I might as well have gotten on both of them, because one of them was going to be standing up for the other one. And if one was mad at me, the other one was mad at me. So I had to, you know, take care of that sometimes. But they brought, in 80, they brought a presence inside, a double. I mean, I was playing Paula inside as well as outside at that time. And because we didn't have any post at USC at the time. And, of course, they go up against Ann Donovan, who's 6'8". And, I mean, they had their hands full. But I'll tell you what, they stood their ground as freshmen. They got better each year. And they're still, to this day, different personalities for sure. And it was sad. It was very sad when Paula didn't make the team, because the Olympic team, because I thought both of them and Cheryl should have been on that team. And Pam and, of course, Cheryl felt that way as well. But I think the fact that they only had 12 players on the team and they weren't going to put, you know, a third of the team from FC at the time. So it was a difficult situation for Paula to handle, for Cheryl and Pam to handle. But I think it all worked out. Paula got some accolades in her career as well, but never to the point or at the stage that Pam and Cheryl got. But I don't think we could have ever won a national championship without that front line with Pam, Paula, and Cheryl. It was such a trio that a lot of people couldn't, you know, they just couldn't deal with it. And like Rhonda said, they were running. I mean, here are bigs at 6'3" running down the floor and scoring layups. And all five of them would run the floor, and it was beautiful to watch. And the women's game was more of a zone type of, you know, that's what everybody played, a 2-3 zone. And then they hadn't really seen a team run like my team. And I think that was the biggest difference with Pam and Paula, in the fact that they could run with the perimeter players, and it made it just an awesome team.
I know one thing. I admired both Pam and Paula McGee. They were academic scholars, and I can remember coming in the locker room, you know, before practice or even sometimes before a game, and Paula would have her books out. And I tried to model my academic standards after Paula. I don't know if I ever told her this, but I really tried to model myself. Now, was I successful in that? Maybe. But I knew that I wanted to be as studious and concentrated on school. It was just as important because they both laid that foundation for us and led by example.
And if I can add in onto that with Rhonda, this is Juliet. You know, Pam and Paula and I, we called ourselves, when we came in, the fabulous freshmen. And I remember when Coach Sharp took us to the Park Pantry on Figueroa, and that's when I first met Pam Paula. And I thought these were very dynamic women, and how the hell was I going to tell them apart? But one has a mold. And we began to develop a friendship with these girls. And Pam was fierce. I don't care what anyone says. Pam was the baddest post in the paint. Pam controlled the paint. I always respected Pam for that. And Paula had a more of an outside finesse about her. She could dribble. She could shoot from the outside. But Pam controlled the paint. And so it was fascinating to watch these girls interact and their interaction between themselves. And they were so different in their personalities. Pam was like, you know, whatever. You know, she came to practice. We had to run extra lines because some Pam did. But, you know, Paula was a little more studious, you know, at that time. It was beautiful to see these girls. It was wonderful to see them blossom where they are today.
This spring, all three tried out for the Olympic team. And for the first time, Paula and Pam, even though they didn't quite realize it, were rivals. Cheryl Miller made the team. Pam McGee made the team. Paula McGee did not. Not strong enough, the coaches decided. Paula hurt, and Pam cried for her.
When you have to sit back and realize that a dream you've had for a long time is no longer attainable, that of course it hurts.
Pam is trying to follow Paula's advice tonight as the heavily favored U.S. plays South Korea for the championship. Paula is in the stands at the Forum.
I'll be cheering like the rest of the Americans. I'll probably have a flag waving it and I'll probably cry because I'll be there watching my sister and Cheryl and Lynette and everybody that I know. I'll be happy for them.
Growing up with my twin sister, we've been playing together forever.
And so sometimes Coach Sharp and Coach Fred would say, Pamela and Paula, stop arguing. Because when you have a twin, if I would pass her the ball and she would miss it, I would say, why did you miss my pass? or anything. So we had that kind of camaraderie. And then you had all of us who were extremely competitive. Cheryl, Coop, we were just Rhonda Windham. We all were just extremely competitive. And so in practice, you know, I tell people our practices were sometimes more competitive than our games because we all understood that iron sharpens iron, and we all wanted each other to be at the peak of their game. And so and to contribute to Cheryl Miller and Cynthia Cooper, you know, people look at their accolades, but those were some of the with the work ethic. They were some of the hardest working players I've ever had the opportunity to play with.
Yeah, and I would say, you know, with Pam and Paula, you know, they were true. They thought, they think a lot. They kind of, like, were very competitive with each other, but also with the opponents. But I can say that they pretty much came to work with passion and purpose every day. You know, when I say they just came with it in practice. I was a practice player at the time a lot, you know, as a coach, assistant coach, you know, and I had to go. You know, Cheryl sometime, and then go over guard Cynthia Cooper. And then, you know, if I drove the lane, I had to meet up against Pam and Paula in the middle. And, Lord, let me tell you, they didn't give me any easy baskets at all. They just made sure that they punished the person coming through the middle. But they were just so unique for us what they wanted. They wanted another championship. They wanted to make sure that they were heard as a woman, and they wanted to, you know, put USC on a map and keep it on the map for a long time in history.
What came across very clearly when watching Women of Troy was the relationship between the players, all of the personality with Pam, Cheryl, Cynthia. I mean, they were just so fun to watch, but they also had an environment that was extremely competitive.
When you have one goal and everyone believes in that goal, you work. You find a way to work together. Yeah. Our practices were harder than our games.
Yes.
We battled in practice. There was almost some form of a fight almost every single day. Cynthia Cooper, big personality. Cheryl Miller, big personality. Pam and Paula McGee, two of them, real big personalities. And I used to tell them, if you don't shut up, you will not get the ball.
Well, it was easy to grow, you know, easy to get better because everyone was so competitive, and it didn't matter if you were on the first team or the second team, you're out there competing with the highest level of talent in the nation, in the world in a lot of cases. And I try to tell people so much how great Cheryl Miller was, but they don't get it. They don't get it because they didn't practice against her, play against her. Same way with the McGee twins. The McGee twins had something special because Paula could stretch you out and go shoot the three. Pam was a beast underneath the basket. And you just had that combination between the two that, shoot, when I came in there, I was like, look, I'm running Paula off the three-point line, and I'm just going to pray that Pam let me get in front of her.
Here you have Rhonda coming in with Cheryl Miller. And Cheryl Miller's gotten all this publicity. And like Rhonda said, she didn't know much about her because she's on the East Coast. Cheryl's on the West Coast. And at that time, women's basketball players didn't get the notoriety that they're getting now. And so, but they gelled together. And that's why I wanted to room them together because I knew that they would be really fantastic on the floor. And Cooper, okay, so you got the freshman class. Then you've got the sophomore class with Cynthia Cooper. And then you've got the McGee's. And so you've got Coop caught in the middle out of that group. But the leadership that was on the floor and the leadership off the floor had a lot to do with all of that. I think Cooper, you know, coming from where she came in the rough part of town in L.A., and then Rhonda coming from a big city. Then Cheryl over here is from, you know, Riverside. She's kind of a country bumpkin coming in. And Pam and Paula McGee coming in from the Midwest. There just was it was just the right chemistry, and it all came together in the fact that they got to play ball and win two national championships all together. I think, had a lot to say about the kind of people they were. They accepted each other. They all were different, but they had a chemistry that was just out of this world. And I was so fortunate to have, you know, players accept each other. But I don't know if it was, I accepted all of them for each of them for who they were. I don't know if it was that, if the players saw, the other players saw that in me, and then they carried that over to them. But I think it was so genuine how they were. There was nothing ever fake about these young women that I was coaching.
You know, LaChina, I think we really saw the bigger picture. I was able to connect with Cynthia because she was from the city. I was from the city. I connected with Cheryl because we were roommates. And then the McGee twins, you have to connect with them. They're the biggest things on the court. You got to get them the ball. So, but then there was also a level of respect from everybody on the team. J.R., Yolanda Fletcher, Jamea Bond, Tracy Longo, Melissa Ward, Leanne Sarah. There was a level of respect for everybody. And, you know, we were young. We were kids. But we knew that we had something special in our talent. And we knew if we worked together, we could make it happen. And we wanted to win. We had a championship attitude in practice every single day. We took pride in going hard in practice every day because we wanted it to be showtime when we got on the court. So we knew if we took care of our business, we were going to have fun on the court. And every minute to that.
You know, another thing to add to that, Rhonda, too, is when you bring in a freshman that's got so much, well, what publicity women's basketball players got at the time in Cheryl Miller, she's like this outstanding player, and she works so hard every day. I mean, I never saw her take a day off in practice. And so here you're on the team, not that the rest of them weren't working hard, but how do you not work hard when one of the best players in the country is working her tail off? That's a leadership role right there. And I think a lot of them, they had to jump on it. And Pam and Paula McGee even had to jump on it, even though they had been the stars before Cheryl. And I remember one thing that was really funny about the McGees coming in as freshmen. They told me, Coach, I thought we were coming here to play basketball, not run cross country. Because I used to take them, they hated it when we're doing preseason conditioning. Because I didn't have preseason conditioning coaches. The head coach did it back in the 70s and 80s. And we'd go out on the track, and I'd have times for them. They had to meet the time, so they ran it over again. And it was hard. It was not an easy workout. And Pam and Paul McGee, Paul would be throwing up on the track, and Pam would be crying. And I mean, because it was hard for 6'3", you know, stay up with the guards. But, boy, they tried. And I don't know how many times Pam had to redo hers over and over again to get the time. I don't know if she ever did, but she sure got a good workout.
It would always seem like as soon as it was time for preseason conditioning, it would be an Indian summer in Los Angeles.
That's true, Rhonda.
You didn't know this, Coach, but Cheryl and I and some of the other players, we would be in our dorm room trying to do all type of dances and seances, everything, so that maybe it would rain, so we wouldn't have to run. It was like the worst thing ever having to run because we knew Pam was not going to make the time.
Yeah.
Oh, Lord,
yeah.
That was me.
Players would go back and, like, run next to her. Like, I can't even remember seeing somebody.
Yeah, they did.
Trying to tell Pam to come on.
Because when I was in college, my coach made us run them. We had 7 players on the team. And we had to make so many in such a short period of time. So I thought, man, that's a hard drill. So I used it my entire career. And the players hated it.
Tell them about our 3-on-3. Coach Sharp had a drill that you had to play 3-on-3 for 3 minutes. And whoever lost had to run. My team would get up by like 4 points, and I would starve for a whole minute. I was so mad. Like, I would be so mad. Like, that's not basketball. That's not – and Pam was like, shoot, I'm trying to win. Because right. Let me tell you something about the McGee twins. Let me tell you one thing the McGee twins are not trying to do. Run. The McGee twins are not trying to sprint.
Right.
Now, as soon as we came on, I said, well, listen, I already know, Pam, you ain't trying to run. That's what I found out, if nothing else. And I found out.
We had to run miles for time, and Cheryl Miller running 5-minute miles. I came here to play basketball. I'm not trying to do cross country.
Cynthia Cooper has meant so much to the history of women's basketball. When you think about the Houston Comets dynasty, the MVP awards, raising the roof, and it was just refreshing and insightful to relive her journey at USC along with her very humble beginnings.
We had great players all around the league, but Cynthia was really the first superstar of the WNBA.
Coop drives right around her to the rack, lays it up and in. Are you kidding me?
She's really done things in sports that many people can only dream of. Not that anybody expected that when she came in the WNBA.
Di fare questa intervista, però così mi fate un po' di compagnia, dai.
Cynthia Cooper began her pro basketball career playing in Europe, spending 11 seasons in Spain and Italy, far from the American spotlight. A valued member of the supporting cast of both collegiate and Olympic championship squads, Cooper's game would blossom and she would become a superstar.
Nobody was following what was going on overseas, but she was dominating the Italian league, leading scorer, won championships. There's people didn't know about her.
Cynthia won 8 scoring titles while quietly becoming one of the very best players in the world.
Well, you know, a lot of people don't realize that, you know, Cynthia Cooper really, she didn't really start, you know, with the starting lineup, you know, for USC. She was more of a player that came off the bench, you know, for us as a 6th player. And, you know, I would get in her ear all the time during practice or after practice and just tell her that, you know, you're getting minutes, you're getting playing time, and you just have to play through that. You're going to be one of the key pieces for us, you know, winning, you know, championships and winning another championship. But, you know, with her, it was just a matter of her just maturing, you know, as a college student and, you know, having the dialogue of how to relate to people each and every day. Then to see her going on after her college career to go overseas and refine her game and develop outside shot and scoring, and then to be drafted into, you know, the WNBA in the league. It was just very gratifying for me to see that, because I know she was going to quit basketball. And, you know, me as assistant coach at that time and Linda Sharp, you know, and her teammates did not want to let her lose her dream like that and let it go. And so that my effort as assistant coach was to go out and find her and help get her back in school.
And I think to tribute to our coaching staff and the type of family we had at USC. And not many people don't understand it. Also, Cynthia and I won the Ronchetti Cup. I played with her in Parma in Italy, and we were noted as the best duo, Cynthia and myself, a guard and a big in the Italian league. I played with Cynthia in Italy, and we won the Ronchetti Cup. And I already knew what she could do because we were friends, you know, and we played in college and we dominated in Europe. We took the worst team and we end up winning the Ronchetti Cup in Europe. And I just say for Cynthia, Cynthia is not only one of my dear friends and one of my sisters in basketball, but the best word I can say for her is resiliency. She doesn't know it, but I admire her afar because of all the hoops and the trials and tribulations that she went through. A little girl from just Watts, no matter what you throw at her, one thing you know about Cynthia Cooper, you can never count her out and she'll never be down for the count. I mean, as one of her best friends and one of the relationships we had in Italy, I mean, I used to call her, she speaks fluent Italian, I used to call her Profundo Atlantis. Which profundo means deep, in Italian, and it means that deeper, and we don't even know where Atlantis is. I was like, that's how deep you are and how strong you are as a black female to come from Watts, to come from. And Fred can tell you in the documentary, you'll see what kind of area she came from. But Cynthia, no matter what the world throws at her, I have always seen her come with resolve. And not only is she just a talented basketball player, and people who talk about her as a basketball player, I loved playing with Cynthia Cooper. I averaged 28 points and 14 boards with Cynthia Cooper because she was an excellent passer when I played with her in Europe. So, you know, and she was the sixth man on our team, and a lot of people didn't know she was on that team because Cooper and Cheryl Miller and myself, Paula and I, got a lot of ink and a lot of pub, but Cynthia was the sixth man off the bench like a Lou Williams from sixth man of the year, like a Lou Williams from the Clippers. And she just added so much depth to our team because you would be playing with us and then you say, oh, man, here come another one.
Hey, basketball fans, I'm Cynthia Cooper, and I'm coming to your city soon with the WNBA.
When the WNBA was launched in 1997, Cynthia signed with the Houston Comets, and now she had a chance to show the American fans what she could do.
Cynthia takes it into the middle, goes right to the hole with a great move and score.
Cynthia Cooper was one player who was just incredible. You know, she could do basically anything, so you didn't really know what she was going to do, when she was going to do it.
Before this season, many didn't know who Cynthia Cooper was, and certainly no one was talking about her, but she has become the star of this league. The Houston Comets are the first ever champions of the WNBA.
Along with her fellow stars Cheryl Swoops and Tina Thompson, Cynthia built Houston into the league's powerhouse.
The Houston Comets have won their fourth straight WNBA championship.
It was really a magical time. And Cynthia was in very many ways the face of that team and the face of the league.
She's 37 years old, but nobody can stop her.
Well, you know, I mean, going to USC for me was like, I was like a fish out of water. But the great news is the Trojan family and my teammates truly helped me become the person that I am today and that you remember seeing on the basketball court. You know, for me, I had to grow up not just athletically but academically. I came from an inner city school. I had to grow up emotionally. I really learned everything, really learned how to be successful at USC. And Pam and Paula were such great role models because they were everything a Trojan should be. So they led by example. And then our coaching staff, right? Our coaching staff were patient with me because I will admit I was a little rough around the edges.
A little.
A little. You know, I
just
still have my
a little cool, not much. Just a little.
So you know, my journey was this. You know, I came from the inner city. I had no expectations, didn't know what to expect. All I wanted to do was play basketball, right? They taught me that there was more to life than basketball. The opportunity that Title IX afforded me, the kid from Watts, was amazing because now I get a chance to go overseas and play in Italy and learn another language. And all of that confidence, the opportunity came from Title IX. The confidence came from USC.
What I didn't realize until watching this documentary was just how good, or should I say great, Cheryl Miller was as a player and much, much more.
And then Cheryl came along and it was this kid's like as big as Louisiana Tech sports player. And she's faster than all your guards. And she plays at the rim. So it was something that was unique to the game at that time.
The 16 ball game. 21 for Miller. She picks it off. This will be no contest.
It was a one-on-one game. They were a learning curve for myself because she was predominantly the victor, and I was the one that was getting the beat down.
Iron sharpens iron, and that's what we really did for each other.
Man, she was a bad mother.
Cheryl was the first player at her size to have the energy and the skill that a 6'3 post player guard, 3'4 had at that time. So she could shoot
go from one, she could play the one to the five.
Yeah. So right. She was one of the very first people that could grab that rebound off the rim and lead your fast break. Stop and pop or finish above the rim. She was the first one to be able to do that.
And I recall, this is the true story. Her first game, she had 28 and 14 boards. And she came in the locker room. She says, I'm going home. I can't play at this level. This is the true story. And I said, Cheryl, what are you talking about? You had 28 points and 14 rebounds. She said, but I know. I thought I could play at this level. I said, Cheryl, you got four other players that are scoring, that are averaging double figures. It's not enough balls where you can still average like 40 and 50 points. That's some good stats for a freshman. But she was serious. She said 28 and 14 rebounds. She was going to go home and drop out of school. She felt she cannot play at the next level.
Just to recap on both with, you know, what Pam and Cynthia are saying about Cheryl. You know, Cheryl played with a lot of style and flair. She cared about her teammates a great deal. And Cheryl played with a lot of fear, you know, because she didn't know what opponents were going to come at her or try to undercut her or certain things, because she, you know, she had that jumping ability, you know, to get to the rim. And, you know, certain teams will come after her pretty hard with hard fouls and stuff. So, you know, she's one of those players who really set the mark, high mark and high bar, not only for herself, but, for women's basketball.
And not only that, we would blow teams out by 70 points. And I recall her diving underneath the scores table for a ball. I said, we called her CM. I said, CM, we are up by 70. She was like, oh, okay, oh, my bad. That's the only day I know how to play.
But, you know, that's the level of pressure and expectation that she put on herself, you know, and she brought that to every practice, and she brought that to every game. And so when I played fast forward WNBA, and people would wonder why I was coming in practice playing like it was the championship series, and that's how I would practice every day. I learned that at USC.
I remember when, as a high school player, I had my best game. Getting in the car and ready to kind of gloat a little bit.
He goes, you know, I started. I said, get out of here, man, that is awesome.
And I'm really kind of ready to give it to Cheryl a little bit. And Cheryl and my dad are in the front, and they're kind of smirking and laughing. And I'm like, yeah, we did this, and we took it to them. And
he said, I had 40. And I go, oh, my gosh, Reggie, that's awesome.
Hey, by the way, how did you do tonight?
I said, well, I had a big game. He goes, what, 60?
Cheryl kind of looks at my dad. And my dad kind of looks at Cheryl. She's like, oh, she had 105. I was like, huh?
It was unbelievable until last night in Riverside, California. The game broke 8 national and state records, and the winning team's best player got 105 points.
Yes!
To be in the same household with arguably the greatest women's basketball player right down the hall, you couldn't win. You couldn't win!
To document the rise, but also the fall of Cheryl Miller was almost a gut punch for me. I did not realize that her career was over at the age of 22.
Coming from my perspective, Cheryl injured herself after I had already left USC. So my perspective is from the fact of just having an athlete injure a knee in the state that Cheryl may have been in. It is devastating. You don't even realize the impact of your knees until you injure your knees and you cannot walk, you cannot stand, you cannot straighten them, you cannot bend them correctly. That is devastating. It was devastating for me, and I was a supporting actor on this team. And I could only imagine what it was for Cheryl. And at that time, I had a partial ACL tear. And I have, I mean, I'm 30 years out and just recently had stem cells on my knee. So I can only, it is devastating to change the course of your life. Here you are thinking that, okay, I'm going to move forward in this whole athletic arena, and it comes to a dead freaking stop. The benefit for me was that I was a supporting cast. I came into USC knowing that I was paving my way to and utilizing USC as a stepping stone for me to get to the next level of where I was going. So I came into USC with that understanding, and yet it was devastating to me. So I can only imagine how devastating this was to Neil, to Cheryl.
What did you think when you heard that? Because I remember one of the things that stood out to me in the documentary is when you talked about you gave Cheryl Miller your number. You were like, oh, you can have this. You know, we're about to do things. So when you heard that basically she was injured and would not play again, what went through your mind?
You know, it broke my heart. I mean, I understood her pain. I understood her physical pain. We're not even talking about the emotional and psychological pain of all that, because there was a deep, there had to have been an extreme deep and psychological pain associated with that. But it broke my heart, because Cheryl was one of the best players in this game, and Cheryl deserved to showcase her talent at the higher level. She deserved that right. And for that to be taken from her, I mean, it broke a lot of hearts. I mean, it broke everybody's hearts. So I can only imagine. Yeah, it really was saddening.
I was in the gym when she hurt her knee, and she was training and playing against guys so she could go and continue to play in USA basketball. In fact, I think she was training for the Pan American Games. And I just couldn't believe that she made a reverse pivot and, you know, and just wrecked her knee. And I'll never forget the day she did it, because that was the end of her USA basketball, quite frankly. I mean, they were getting ready for Pan Americans and then the 88 Olympics. And, you know, I know she would have played in the Olympics in 88. She hadn't been hurt. But the thing about Cheryl that I think kind of consoled her some was the fact that she could, she was in broadcast journalism. And that was the academic area that she really wanted to excel in. And I thought, well, she's not going to play anymore. And Cheryl's a smart woman. And I think she had that to look forward to. And she was kind of bitter and upset about all of it and everything. And I was going to an event in L.A., and I think it was ABC. There was a man that was going to be there. He was an SC guy, and I can't remember his name now. But he wanted to meet Cheryl, and I knew this. And I told Cheryl she needed to go with me to this event. She did not want to go. And as you guys know, getting her to go places sometimes, because she's pretty much a homebody, it was tough. But she finally agreed, and I introduced her to this. I'm sorry, I can't remember his name. It was back in 87. And when she met him, they got to talking, and he hired her. He hired her to come and work for him. So it was. A good thing that she went, one, and I was so happy that she had an opportunity to go to work for ABC. And I think from there, she just, you know, it opened the doors for her to other opportunities. But I think that helped her, and I hope she feels like that. I don't know if she remembers that part of it, but I felt good that I could guide her into something. You know, I met somebody that wanted to really talk with her. And so, you know, I feel good about that direction she went. And she did an excellent job. She's worked for Turner. She's 17 years. And now she's working for Fox in a radio. And I think she really enjoys that part of her career, as well as coaching, of course. But she handled it well after that.
I know firsthand, you know, what it feels like to, you know, have a devastating injury. You know, I blew out my knee. Down at Colorado Springs at the Olympic training facility, and you know, I had total reconstruction back in the 80s. Fortunately, I was able to play again, but you know, you're never the same. And here we are, you know, what, 35 years later, and I just had a total knee replacement. And you know, nothing can ever replace basketball. Basketball is something that, you know, you can never replace it. But, you you know, with coach having us lift weights early on, lifting weights is something that I've been able to do my entire life after that. It's like my body craves it. And, you know, you try and find other things to give you that rush and that energy. But, I mean, there's nothing that compares to it. And, you know, I remember when Cheryl actually went and tried out for the 88 Olympic team. But she wasn't herself. You know, she wasn't herself. And she wound up, I don't know if she tweaked her knee while we were there, because I went with her to the tryouts in Colorado Springs. I don't know if she tweaked her knee when she was there, but she wound up leaving early because she just wasn't herself. She wasn't able to end the game on her terms. And, it's still a little painful, but, you know, I think this documentary happening at this time and really establishing her place in history and kind of reminding people what she did and what she was a part of, you know, I think that's something not only that she should be proud of, but we're also very proud too.
Thank you all for sharing on that. I know it's a very difficult topic, but I think it's important, especially for young people, to understand that a career is not promised. Injuries happen, but also the impact of injuries once you've moved on from the game. You know, that's the part that sometimes they don't tell you. And as far as just taking care of your body and making sure that, hey, when basketball's done, you're going to want to walk around for the next 80 years after that. So, you know, that it's something that should definitely be talked about more, and especially because of what happened to the legacy of Cheryl Miller. I mean, amazing, amazing player, but you could only think if she was allowed to play beyond, you know, at full strength beyond the age of 22, what that would have meant for women's basketball. Things were so different back then in the landscape of women's college basketball. And thank goodness for Title IX, and thank goodness for coaches like Linda Sharp and administration like they had at USC to be able to give women's basketball the platform, the resources, the opportunity to thrive the way that they did.
This documentary represents our athletic excellence, and it also recognizes our academic excellence as well, which is the true Trojan tradition which we are representing here today.
Champions trust their teammates, and that is so true with that USC group. And to today, any championship team, you got to trust your teammates, you got to trust your staff through the thing.
You got to trust the process.
Absolutely.
Because remember, LaChyna, I came off the bench. And if I didn't trust the process, I would have quit. I would have stopped. You know, years and years later, I'm a Hall of Famer. But back then, I was a role player. So you got to trust the process.
Exactly. And for me, I just want to piggyback. When we see teams today and with Twitter and social media, I want to piggyback that it takes five fingers to carry the trophy. And with that team, we really worked together and we were family. And we set a standard. And even today, we have our reunions. We try to hook up at least together once a year. Those, I could tell people that beyond basketball, each and every person on that team are my soul sisters. You know, God puts people in your life that minister to your soul. It was just so much more than just basketball. We were a family. The entire Trojan tradition and the Trojan family set a standard. Our athletic director, who was the first athletic director over men and women, she just gave us a standard and she mentored us. And so now what you see in the documentary set a standard. It is my belief as team captain of this team that we, and this legacy, is that we are the children of USC. We are the children. And we, through this documentary, we have come home.
We just want to say a special thank you to everyone that listened to this podcast, to all of our guests, to HBO, Chuck Kingsbury.
Yes, and we also like to thank the WNBA, Classic Basketball Archives, NCAA Archives, and the Winning Time documentary for the use of the audio clips that were used.
Our fantastic and fabulous producer, Tarika Foster Brasby, we hope that you enjoyed this history lesson on the women of Troy.
Thank you for listening to Around the Rim. Check out more podcasts from ESPN on the ESPN app.